Does the word surrender have a bad connotation for you? Ever wonder when that word would be a positive word to you, like so many others in recovery? As we continue this week to talk about step one, we'll address those ideas and more in this episode of Recovery Support with Kevin Bergen. This is Recovery Support, and I'm Kevin Bergen, licensed psychotherapist. The show's purpose is to support those in recovery of any kind, and it focuses on recovery from porn addiction, sexual acting out, or any sexually compulsive behavior. My aim is to support your recovery with education, inspiration, and motivation. Continuing from last week's episode, we're going to cover more today on step one. I mentioned last week that steps 1, 2, and 3 are steps designed to revisit on a regular basis. How often do you go back and read the work you did for these three steps? Sexaholics in successful recovery revisit these steps on a regular basis, and often they learn something new each time. As we normally do, we're going to start again today by reading from Sexaholics Anonymous book, The White Book. We're going to read the problem. This is even more fitting for today's subject in step one. Listen with a special ear and grab something out of this today that has something to do with step one. On page 203 of the White Book, it says, "Many of us felt inadequate, unworthy, alone, and afraid. Our insides never matched what we saw on the outsides of others. Early on, we came to feel disconnected. From parents, from peers, from ourselves. We tuned out with fantasy and masturbation. We plugged in by drinking in the pictures, the images, and pursuing the objects of our fantasies. We lusted and wanted to be lusted after. We became true addicts. Sex with self, promiscuity, adultery, dependency relationships, and more fantasy. We got it through the eyes. We bought it. We sold it. We traded it, we gave it away. We were addicted to the intrigue, the tease, the forbidden. The only way we knew to be free of it was to do it. Please connect with me and make me whole," we cried with outstretched arms. Lusting after the big fix, we gave away our power to others. This produced guilt, self-hatred, remorse, emptiness, and pain, and we were driven ever inward, away from reality, away from love, lost inside ourselves. Our habit made true intimacy impossible. We could never know real union with another because we were addicted to the unreal. We went for the chemistry, the connection that had the magic, because it bypassed intimacy and true union. Fantasy corrupted the real, lust killed love. First addicts, then love cripples, we took from others to fill up what was lacking in ourselves. Conning ourselves time and again that the next one would save us, we were really losing our lives. How does this relate to step one? Well, step one is about admitting our unmanageability. And if this doesn't sound unmanageable, I don't know what does. Bypassing real intimacy and any kind of true union is not an effective way to live our lives. We're going to read today from Step Into Action. Step Into Action is a publication that Sexaholics Anonymous came out with in 2004, and there are three volumes of this. The first volume covers steps 1, 2, and 3, and then the other two volumes cover the other 12 steps. We're going to read today, starting on page 11 of Step Into Action. This gives a little background of what it is to be a sexaholic, how people got here, what's going on. Starting on page 11, Step Into Action. Why are you here? If the answer is, I can't go on like this and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to stop, then read on. One member said, I felt so ready for sobriety. In fact, I cried many times that first week, but this time it was out of relief. The old-timers told me to make sure I was really ready. Wishy-washy starts in the SA program just don't cut it. Quote, if you're not sure, go out and try some more pain, they said. They asked me if I felt I had any options other than to stop completely. I had to say no. We are sexaholics. We've gone through a personal hell to get to recovery. There is a way out. We wrote this book to share our experiences with you. Most of us came to Sexaholics Anonymous driven to despair by our destructive sexual behaviors. We had reached a level of pain in our lives that we could no longer tolerate. Perhaps we saw for the first time where our behavior was leading, and fear drove us to seek help before things got worse. Sincerely or casually, we may have tried numerous ways to stop. For many of us, it had taken years before we got to the point of asking what was wrong. From our earliest days, we thought sex or lust was our friend. We used it as a refuge to escape our pain, to escape life. For many of us, it began with fantasies. These visions removed us from a troubled family life, uneasy social situations, self-doubt, or painful abuse. The fantasies were about power, magic, romance, security, and sex. At first, these fantasies worked. They reduced stress, offered protection, and made us feel useful, important, and loved. Over time, the fantasies began to demand more of our time and energy. Ultimately, they took control, and we could no longer curb them. They began to curb us. Another member says, when I look back on how my addiction grew, it was like a tornado. At first it was small, with little visible impact on anyone, just a twisted cloud in the air. But over time it grew, gaining momentum and power. It began damaging things through angry outbursts, taking time and money away from family. Minor at first, but growing ever more powerful, it began consuming everything in sight, all my time, a substantial amount of money. Then started the constant verbal abuse toward my wife and family. I finally found my way to SA just as my tornado was about to destroy everything I had. Close quote. Moral values and character traits that formerly guided us gave way to self-centered pleasure-seeking. Caught up in ourselves, we violated family, social, personal, and legal boundaries over and over again. For the sexaholic, lust had changed sex from a natural instinct to an unnatural compulsion. We faced a dilemma. The sensations and actions we believed we most needed to live in the world were killing us and destroying all love. Somewhere along the way, we realized that lust had become a bigger problem than the problems we were trying to avoid. Once we started to lust, we couldn't stop. We were out of control. Behaviors we once only imagined now were acted out. Relationships, once treasured, became secondary to sexual fantasy and lust. We were stuck. Another SA member writes, I have a wife who loves me, wonderful, well-adjusted children, a nice house in a good location, and enough money to enjoy myself. So why am I going out trying to ruin my life with the affairs I've been having? What is wrong with me? Close quote. Our problem with lust has been likened to the alcoholic's problem with alcohol. As the alcoholic cannot tolerate one drink of alcohol, we cannot tolerate even the smallest drink of lust. For lust always led to more lust, eventually making us drunk with it. Once drunk, the urge to act out sexually was impossible to resist. Worse, lust kept taking us deeper and deeper into behaviors we promised ourselves we would never do. This was the true nature of the sex-lust problem we call sexaholism. We were too drunk to see reality. One member says, toward the end of my addiction, the pain got so bad that one day I told a therapist everything that I had been doing. I said how much this felt like alcohol did 8 years ago, a real hell. Then I asked him if this could be an addiction too, just like booze was, and he said, oh, yes, absolutely. Thank heaven he did. The next night, I was at my first SA meeting, close quote. Once we accepted that lust was the real problem, and that our sexual acting out was a byproduct of lust, the idea that we could stop the undesirable sexual behaviors while allowing lust to live in our minds had to be eliminated. The conclusion was inescapable. Lust had to go if we were to stop the destructive sexual behaviors. We found that we could not successfully recover without the support of a fellowship of other sexaholics. We learned that we must first stop our sexual acting out in all forms and seek a spiritual solution for our problem. We discovered that we must examine our character and seek to change those patterns that led us to resort to fantasy and sexual misbehavior in the first place. This was the path to our goal of healing from a lifelong practice of unhealthy thoughts and actions. Having gotten this far, we were ready to make the decision to follow SA's simple program of recovery. For most of us, the first new behavior was to begin attending meetings. Next, we committed to SA's definition of sexual sobriety. We became willing to listen to the experience, strength, and hope of recovery shared by members at SA meetings. We got a sponsor and began following another person's guidance rather than our own. For the first time, we realized there was a path to freedom from fantasy and lust. Quote, I found a sponsor immediately, and his suggestion of calling daily was a big help. Stick with the winners, he said. It's a good thing that he did say that, because I was not capable by myself of dealing with life on life's terms. He also was my guide through the 12 steps. Close quote. Working the 12 steps with the guidance of a sponsor is the core of SA's program. Attending meetings, joining the fellowship, and following the 12 traditions support us on this journey. One day at a time, we remain sexually sober. We welcome you to join us on this path of recovery. That finishes that section at the beginning of the book, Step Into Action. And I'm going to turn now to the section starting on page 39. Some of those things that I just read have a deep meaning for many people in recovery. So much is the opening of a new world when they step into a place of support, a network that is helpful, a network of people who you can call, who you can reach out to when you're having a tough time, when you feel tempted to act out, when you're just feeling down and you need somebody to talk to. Starting on page 39 of the first volume of Step Into Action, we admitted we were powerless over lust, that our lives had become unmanageable. That's step one. Step one is a flat admission of defeat. We are beaten, we said, and we can't stop doing what makes us sick. Lust was killing us. There was an unexpected gift in this admission of weakness. By accepting reality, by acknowledging our disease, by embracing our failure, we found hope. This was the start of surrender. We began to build a road to recovery. Let's begin by looking at the words in the step. We. What does that mean? It's simple. I can't do this alone. We replaces I. It was not enough for me to admit that I'm a sexaholic. I had to admit it with you. I admit it. You admit it. We admit it. When we admitted our powerlessness to others and they to us, something special happened. By admitting the truth about ourselves, the power the secret had over us somehow lessened. Some of the guilt and shame melted away, and we began to look honestly at what was really going on in our lives. That's where the gift came in. What did we admit? We admitted we were powerless. What does powerless mean? Here's the way one member described it. My automobile stops on the railroad track and will not start. I'm locked inside. I cannot open the door. I cannot open the window. I can't get out of the car. A train is coming. I'm without power to stop the train from hitting my car, nor can I get out of the car to save myself. What is it that I'm without power to do? That train rushing at me is lust. I am powerless over lust. It does not say I am powerless over my compulsive sexual behaviors. I am powerless over lust. What then is lust? Lust is excessive and unreasonable thoughts or feelings that drive us to use or manipulate ourselves, others, or things for self-centered destructive purposes. Let me read that sentence again. What is lust? Lust is excessive and unreasonable thoughts or feelings that drive us to use or manipulate ourselves, others, or things for self-centered destructive purposes. Lust is what we get when we impose a distorted spiritual attitude upon a natural drive. It is an obsession. We are drawn helplessly to lust, trading short-term pleasure for long-term pain over and over again. The more one acts out, the greater the lust hunger. The greater the lust hunger, the more one acts out. Efforts to control or stop lust are met with a reaction from the brain, which now expects the stimulation and experiences deprivation without it. The compulsion deepens the obsession. We keep driving back onto the train track in spite of the growing awareness that we are in trouble. If we think of something and keep repeating it in our heads and attach a feeling to it, we will create it. In other words, a building is not created by putting bricks together. It is created from an idea of the architect who thought about it, dreamed about it, worked and labored to see it come to pass. If we permit a lust thought to remain in our heads without dealing with it immediately, we begin physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, and neurological changes within us. If we repeat these lust thoughts, we will create the reality. Our creation, sex with self, or sex outside marriage, or some other form of destructive acting out, is the result of lust. Lust is more powerful than we are. Awareness of our problem is fundamental to any attempt at obtaining sobriety. One of the biggest stumbling blocks in our efforts to become and remain sexually sober is our inability to fully understand, accept, and admit our powerlessness over lust. Our admission of powerlessness over lust is the way to physical, mental, and spiritual freedom. Here is the essence of powerlessness for the sexaholic. We do something out of lust, we get a negative result, and yet we do it again in the vain hope of a different outcome. Our lives become unmanageable. The second half of this step is about our unmanageability. Our inability to cope with life on life's terms accompanied our sexaholic thinking and behavior. It is our experience that a life driven by lust brings with it confusion, chaos, misery, and disaster. Some of us have been arrested. Others were lucky and didn't get caught. We have suffered in numerous ways and caused suffering for others, including those most dear to us. We've lost marriages or limped along for years in empty marriages. We were too preoccupied with our lust drug to foster intimacy or pay attention to the simplest needs of our husbands, wives, or children. We disregarded our conscience and we invoked God's help while continuing the same sick behaviors. We experienced moral revulsion at doing that which we didn't want to do, but felt compelled to do nonetheless. Some of us have lost friends or have been unable to make friends. We've avoided relationships and jobs because we were afraid. Many of us were unable to enter and sustain any kind of intimate relationship because we had to protect our secrets. We've lost our jobs, or we've struggled along in unfulfilling, often underpaid careers because we were too distracted to put our energy into our work. We've spent large portions of our lives teetering on the edge of chaos. We've wrecked careers, homes, and lives. Some of us have been hospitalized for depression, have attempted suicide, or even killed ourselves because sexaholism destroyed our physical, emotional, and spiritual being. In step one, we admitted that we were powerless and that our lives had become unmanageable. We admitted it to ourselves, to our sponsor, and to our group. We broke out of our isolation. We finally exposed our secrets. When we gave away our weakness, we began to find hope. That's the chapter on step one in Step Into Action. So what did you get out of that? Were there some things that spoke to you? I encourage you to listen to this more than once. There's a lot of nuggets of truth in there, and there's many things that will reach one person that won't reach another person. I encourage you to get a copy of Step Into Action. There's a section after this on page 43 called Members of SA Share, and it's a collection of individual experiences around step one, and it can be very uplifting and very motivating for many people. I'm going to finish today's podcast in the readings by reading once again the solution on page 204 of the White Book. We saw that our problem was threefold: physical, emotional, and spiritual. Healing had to come about in all three. The crucial change in attitude began when we admitted we were powerless, that our habit had us whipped. We came to meetings and withdrew from our habit. For some, this meant no sex with themselves or others, including not getting into relationships. For others, it also meant drying out and not having sex with a spouse for a time to recover from lust. We discovered that we could stop, that not feeding the hunger didn't kill us, that sex was indeed optional. There was hope for freedom, and we began to feel alive. Encouraged to continue, we turned more and more away from our isolating obsession with sex and self and turned to God and others. All this was scary. We couldn't see the path ahead, except that others had gone that way before. Each new step of surrender felt it would be off the edge into oblivion, but we took it. And instead of killing us, surrender was killing the obsession. We had stepped into the light, into a whole new way of life. The fellowship gave us monitoring and support to keep us from being overwhelmed, a safe haven where we could finally face ourselves. Instead of covering our feelings with compulsive sex, we began exposing the roots of our spiritual emptiness and hunger, and the healing began. As we faced our defects, we became willing to change. Surrendering them broke the power they had over us. We began to be more comfortable with ourselves and others, for the first time without our drug. Forgiving all who had injured us, and without injuring others, we tried to right our own wrongs. At each amends, more of the dreadful load of guilt dropped from our shoulders until we could lift our heads, look the world in the eye, and stand free. We began practicing a positive sobriety, taking the actions of love to improve our relations with others. We were learning how to give, and the measure we gave was the measure we got back. We were finding that none of the substitutes had ever supplied. We were making the real connection. We were home. And as is our tradition on recovery support, We're going to close today with the third step prayer found on page 63 of Alcoholics Anonymous. Those of you who know this prayer, please join me. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Thank you for the emails coming in. I appreciate those. I'd like to hear more from you about this podcast and how it's affecting you. You can email me at kbrecoverysupport@gmail.com. And in the spirit of the seventh tradition, I do accept contributions to cover the expenses of this podcast. You can anonymously donate via PayPal through the link on the show notes page. And to see the show notes, to see links to works that I quote from, and other information, go to recoverysupport.podbean.com. Podbean is P-O-D-B-E-A-N. Thank you for being with me today. I look forward to being with you in next week's episode of Recovery Support with Kevin Bergen. Have a sober day.